All right, let's jump into a case today that's really going to make you think. Abrams v. City of Chicago. It's just a tragic story, and it brings up some, you know, really tough legal questions about, like, responsibility and how far a city's liability actually goes, especially in emergencies. So picture this. Patricia Abrams is at home. She's in labor. Her contractions are 10 minutes apart.
Oh, wow.
She calls 911
okay.
twice for an ambulance.
Yeah.
And both times,
mm-hmm.
refused.
Wow. So what happened?
Well, she ends up having a friend drive her to the hospital.
Huh.
Friend runs a red light, and they collide with another driver, a speeding, intoxicated driver.
Hmm.
And tragically, Abrams' baby dies.
That's awful. So does she sue the city?
She does. And that's where it gets really interesting, legally speaking.
Yeah.
Because the city actually admitted that had they sent an ambulance, Abrams wouldn't have been in that car.
Oh, really? So they're admitting fault.
Well, not exactly. See, they admitted to what's called cause in fact.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, if they had acted differently, the accident wouldn't have happened. But the case hinges on this other concept, this more nuanced concept called proximate cause.
Proximate cause. Mm-hmm. Always a tricky one. For our listeners who might not be legal experts, can we break that down a bit?
Absolutely. So in the simplest terms, proximate cause means that for someone to be held responsible for harm, their actions can't just be part of the story. The harm also have to be a foreseeable consequence of what they did or didn't do. Think of it as a two-part test.
Okay, I'm following.
First, there's cause, in fact. Like we said, did the harm happen because of the defendant's actions? And in this case, the city admitted to that part.
Yeah, right. But then there's the second part, legal cause.
Exactly. Yeah. Legal cause asks, was the harm a reasonably foreseeable result of those actions? That's where things get really murky.
So the city is basically saying, yeah, maybe we messed up by not sending the ambulance, but how could we have known that would lead to a car accident and, you know, such a tragic loss?
Precisely. They're essentially saying, we might have set the stage in a way, but we didn't cause the accident. And to make their case, the court looked to some major legal precedents, you know, some of the big ones.
Like what?
Well, one they referenced was Paul's Graf v. Long Island Railroad. It's a classic case that helps, you know, draw that line between creating a risky situation and actually causing harm.
Right. Paul's Graf. That one's all about foreseeability, isn't it?
Exactly. And it's making me think, like, imagine a domino effect. You know, one domino falls and might set off a whole chain reaction. But at what point does that initial push stop being the real cause of that final domino falling?
I like that analogy. So the city in this case, they're like, we might have tipped that first domino, but those drivers, they were the ones who really sent things spiraling out of control.
Right. To solidify this idea of, you know, how unpredictable things can be, the court brought in another landmark case. Overseas Tankship v. Mortstock, often called the Wagon Mound case. Again, emphasis on foreseeability.
So big legal names being thrown around, but let's get specific. What were the court's actual justifications for siding with the city? What were their main points?
They had three, actually. First, they said the time frame between the dispatcher refusing to send help and the accident itself just wasn't enough to establish a solid link. Like, they're saying it's not reasonable to assume those two events were directly and foreseeably connected.
Because even though she was in labor, those 10-minute contractions didn't scream, car accident is imminent.
Right.
Right.
And their second point, they brought up the driver's actions. Remember, her friend ran a red light, and the other driver was speeding, intoxicated, and driving with a suspended license. Three strikes right there. The court saw those actions as, like, major intervening factors. Like, they broke the chain of causation.
So the city's saying, hey, the recklessness of these drivers, that's the real cause here, not our initial decision.
Exactly. They argued those reckless choices were so far removed from their decision, it's just not reasonable to hold them accountable. And then their final point, and this is interesting, they brought up what they called policy considerations.
Policy considerations.
They expressed concern about the wider implications of this case. Like, if they ruled against the city, it could lead to, you know, tons of lawsuits against cities in situations where the link between their actions and the harm is, well, maybe a bit of a stretch.
Right, the slippery slope argument. Where do you draw the line? But it does make you wonder, doesn't it? What if things were just a little different? Like, what if there hadn't been any reckless driving? What if the driver just hit some ice and lost control?
Interesting point. Because the court really focused on the nature of the driver's actions, how reckless they were, how illegal. They even quoted a previous case, Nearing v. Illinois Central RR, which says, the law doesn't require anticipation of the improbable.
So essentially they're saying, we can't expect the city to predict that two drivers are going to act so recklessly. creating this, you know, perfect storm of tragic events.
Yeah, that's their reasoning. But it does make you think, where does that line blur between improbable and foreseeable?
Right, that's the million-dollar question, especially for legal professionals. We got to figure that out.
Something else that stood out to me, the court chose to decide proximate cause as a matter of law.
Interesting.
Which is unusual in negligence cases, right?
Yeah.
Usually that goes to a jury.
Right, right. Typically that's a jury question.
But here the court was adamant that the city's refusal, you know, just wasn't the proximate cause. Clear enough for them to make the call themselves.
Okay, so for lawyers handling similar cases, what should they take away from this? What are the big lessons?
Well, I'd say there are three big ones to keep in mind. First, when you're building a case, it's not enough to tell a story, you know, just a general narrative. You got to break down the cause and effect step by step, each link in the chain.
Like a flow chart, almost.
Yeah, exactly. And then second point, and this is crucial for writing those legal documents.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be super clear when distinguishing between conditions and causes. Don't just say, oh, the defendant created a condition that made the harm possible. You got to prove their actions were the direct and foreseeable cause.
So very precise language, no room for interpretation.
Exactly. And finally, this is key. When you're filing those motions, asking the judge to decide a specific issue, you got to use similar cases effectively. Don't just lean on those general legal principles.
Right. The precedent is so important.
Yeah. You know, the court actually cited cases about parking violations, forcing people to cross the street mid-block.
Wow. Really?
Seemingly unrelated. But they used them to really hammer home that point.
Yeah.
Even when actions indirectly contribute to harm, they can still be considered too far removed to prove proximate cause. So those strong, relevant precedents, they can make or break your argument.
Absolutely. Good legal research is key.
Before we move on, I want to leave our listeners with a question. This decision, it's cited so strongly with the city, did it give municipalities too much protection from liability? Where does that responsibility begin? What if a 911 dispatcher gives bad medical advice and someone gets hurt because of it? When does the city become liable?
Great questions. And that's exactly what we're going to tackle in part two of this deep dive. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to our deep dive into Abrams v. City of Chicago. You know, before the break, we were talking about that big question. Does this decision, you know, with the court siding so strongly with the city, does it kind of let municipalities off the hook too easily? Especially when it comes to those, like, emergency situations.
Yeah, it's a question that keeps coming up, right? When someone relies on 9/11 and then they're either given bad information or straight up denied help, where's the line? Like, when does the city actually become responsible for what happens? And it's not just theoretical, right? I mean, there are actual cases that really show how tricky this can be. There's this case, Happel v. Walmart, kind of interesting to compare it to Abrams. It dealt with pharmacy errors, like pharmacists messing up prescriptions. And those mistakes led to, you know, some pretty predictable medical emergencies.
Okay, so how does a pharmacy case, how does that connect to our ambulance situation? Seems pretty different at first glance.
Yeah, on the surface, for sure. But in Happel, the court decided that the pharmacy, by giving out the wrong meds, they created a situation where, well, medical emergencies were bound to happen, so they were held responsible for the harm that followed.
So thinking about Abrams, the difference seems to be, you know, in Happel, the pharmacy directly caused the medical harm. But in Abrams, the link between that dispatcher refusing to send help and the car accident, it feels way more indirect.
Exactly. And that's precisely the distinction the court made in Abrams. They were very careful to separate, you know, direct medical harm from, as they called it, the collateral risks of transportation. Basically saying, look, the city isn't responsible for everything that might happen to someone on their way to the hospital, even if we didn't send an ambulance.
Right. But there's still that gray area, isn't there? Like, what if instead of just saying no ambulance, the dispatcher gave, like, bad medical advice, told Abrams, oh, just wait it out at home, when she really needed to go to the hospital, like, right away. And then something bad happened during that delay.
That's a really good question. And it's one that courts and, you know, legal experts are still debating. Could a plaintiff successfully argue that cities have this, like, special duty when it comes to emergency response, a duty that goes beyond just, you know, not creating a dangerous situation themselves? It's definitely possible. And it could really change how these cases are decided.
Yeah. Makes you think, as a lawyer advising a client in this situation, you got to look past just, like, the letter of the law and consider those bigger arguments about duty and responsibility.
Totally. It shows how important it is to, like, stay on top of these legal precedents, see how they might apply in new situations. The law's always changing, and cases like Abrams, they can spark that change.
It makes you wonder, could this case, could it lead to, like, clearer guidelines for 911 dispatchers? Or maybe even, like, new laws that really define what a city is responsible for when it comes to emergencies?
Oh, absolutely. It's possible. Legal precedents often lead to those kinds of discussions, and sometimes even, you know, actual legal reforms.
It reminds us that the law isn't just, like, this fixed thing. It's always adapting to new challenges, responding to how society changes.
And that's what makes this whole area so interesting. It's not just about applying these rigid rules. It's about dealing with these, like, tough questions and trying to reach fair outcomes in a world that's constantly shifting. You know, cases like Abrams, they make us face those uncomfortable gray areas where the law is still catching up to real life experiences.
Could have said it better myself. And it's not just legal theory, right? We're talking about real people and their lives. Before we go to part three, I want to point out something the court emphasized. This case, it wasn't just about these abstract principles. It was about a real tragic loss. They acknowledged the, you know, the terrible sadness of Abrams losing her baby, and they even expressed, like, sympathy for the dispatcher, who was no doubt in a really tough spot.
Right, that's crucial. Even when we're, you know, picking apart these legal details, we can't forget that at the center of all this are real people with real emotions. Behind every case, there are real lives.
It's a balance, isn't it? The law needs to be objective and consistent, but it also has to recognize, you know, how messy life can be, the emotional impact these situations have on everyone.
Well said. And that's something for all of us to think about, not just lawyers and judges, but anyone who interacts with the legal system. It's a powerful tool, but it's a human one too, shaped by our values, our experiences, and our ability to empathize.
That's a great point. Okay, so in part three, we're going to look at a few more legal precedents that can help us understand this whole issue of proximate cause and municipal liability even better. All right, welcome back for the last part of our deep dive into Abrams v. City of Chicago. We've been really digging into this whole idea of proximate cause, you know, and how it applies to cities and their liability. And it seems like this case, it just brings up more questions than answers, right?
Definitely. It really makes us think about where that responsibility begins and ends, especially with those essential services like 9/11, you know, the stakes are so high.
Before we went to part three, we were talking about, you know, the human side of these cases. And I think that leads us nicely into looking at some other legal precedents, right? Seeing how courts handle similar situations in the past can give us a broader view of proximate cause and how it all fits together.
I agree. It helps us understand those little details, the nuances of how proximate cause is applied in, like, real life situations, you know?
One that comes to mind is Strauss v. Bell Realty Co. power outage in New York City. Man falls down some stairs in his apartment building. It's dark and he gets hurt.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one.
He sues the power company, says they're responsible for his injuries.
Right, but the court said, hold on, not so fast.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They ruled that the power company, they didn't actually owe a duty of care to that guy because he wasn't their direct customer, right? It was the apartment building that was their customer.
Mm. It's all about those relationships, those legal obligations. Even though the power company's, you know, inaction, that failing to prevent the outage created that dangerous situation, they weren't on the hook for the guy's injuries because, legally speaking, they didn't owe him that duty.
It's like, yeah, they might have set the stage for the accident, but they weren't directly responsible for it.
Precisely. It just highlights how liability goes beyond simple cause and effect.
It makes me think back to Abrams and, you know, how the city was worried about opening up the floodgates to all these lawsuits. Strauss kind of supports that, right? Like, courts are careful not to make liability too broad.
Absolutely. They're always trying to find that balance, right? Holding people and entities accountable, but also, you know, making sure those important services can keep running smoothly without that constant fear of litigation.
It's a delicate balance, for sure.
Yeah.
There's another case I think we should bring in, Lauer v. City of New York. Medical examiner messes up an autopsy report.
Oh, right. And that mistake led to a guy being wrongly accused of murder?
Exactly. A huge consequence.
And this one really gets into the whole concept of government immunity.
Yeah, the court ultimately decided the medical examiner, as a city employee, he was protected by that immunity, even though his actions had, you know, these really serious consequences.
So he wasn't personally liable because he was acting in his official capacity.
Even though he made this huge mistake, right? That's fascinating.
It is. It shows how complicated this whole area of law can be. Government immunity. Essentially, it protects those government officials from being sued for stuff they do as part of their jobs. The idea is for the government to work, officials need some level of protection.
Right, so it's not a free pass, but it's definitely a factor.
Exactly. Not a free pass, but a shield, you know.
It seems like courts are very deliberate about, setting clear boundaries for liability, especially when it comes to things like the government, cities, those public entities, almost like they don't want to hinder how those parts of society function by, burdening them with too much potential liability.
That's a great point. There's this understanding that if government agencies and their employees are constantly worried about getting sued, it could really get in the way of them doing their jobs effectively.
So again, it all goes back to that balancing act, right?
Yeah.
Finding that middle ground where there's justice, accountability, but also making sure those essential services can still function.
Absolutely. And Abrams v. City of Chicago, it fits perfectly into this whole conversation. It makes us think about those big questions like responsibility, who is accountable, and where do we draw the line with legal action?
It's been a great deep dive, I think, looking at all these twists and turns in the legal world. Hopefully, our listeners have a better grasp on how proximate cause works in real life and what it means for lawyers.
I hope so too. It reminds us that the law isn't just a bunch of like theoretical principles. It's a living, breathing thing that affects us all.
And as we've seen, sometimes it's messy, right? Lots of gray areas, tough questions, no easy answers. But like Abrams and all these other cases show, working through that messiness, it's essential to making sure the law keeps up with us, with how complicated human life is.
Well said. I couldn't agree more.
Well, that about wraps it up for this deep dive. Thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you next time as we continue exploring the fascinating world of law, precedent, and how it all shapes our lives.
See you next time.